Meeting of the County Health Commission. Formal order of business, which is the approval of the minutes of the last meeting, November 19th. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes of the last meeting? Approval has been moved and seconded. There being no objection, the minutes will stand as mailed out and published. Okay, next is the public comment period. This is the time when anyone who wishes to say something that is not on, about something that is not on the agenda may come forward. Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chairman Enns and members of the commission. My name is Jesse Arnold. I live in Cambria. I wanted to report to you that I talked to Bob Lilly, our ag commissioner, on Saturday, and he met with all the ag commissioners of the state in Sacramento last week, and they had a report from a representative of the U.S. Department of Agriculture regarding when regulations may happen on genetically engineered crops. And you may know that two suits were brought by the Center for Food Safety against USDA and the Center for Food Safety won those suits, and that's why now under court order the USDA is being told you have got to do environmental assessments on these crops and you have to have some regulations that actually regulate. And so when that's the state of affairs, it's pretty clear that labeling also is called for, but we'll get back to that. Bob Lilly said it will probably take all of 2008 for the USDA to get through the process of making some meaningful regulations. With a judge behind them, maybe they will do that. I know if there weren't a judge behind them, they would drag it out longer than that. But hopefully there will be some regulations. Bob said the soonest he can go report to the Board of Supervisors is sometime in February. And I would hope that the commission would make a New Year's resolution to support the wish of Dr. Greg Thomas, the health officer, that there be labeling of genetically engineered food and take that recommendation to the Board of Supervisors then. If not then, we have the rest of 2008 to do it. Meanwhile, we can thank the Avila Valley Barn for doing the labeling they have been doing, which I did. I did send them a thank you letter. And our challenge for next year is the Hayashi and Sons growers have been selling BT corn without labeling it. So that'll be our challenge next year, is to get them to label voluntarily. And anyone else, if they decide to grow the BT corn, hopefully they will label it. Some of you may have seen that there's a report came out on a study done in Indiana on caddisflies in the streams that are affected by the fallout from BT corn, both the pollen and pieces of leaf from the plant, and they found indeed that it does have a detrimental effect on the caddisfly. So the BT in the BT corn doesn't just kill the earworms, it does kill other larvae, other insects. So it is, when the proponents say that they're reducing the use of pesticides, yes, this is true if they were formerly using chemicals, but the whole plant is a pesticide, the pollen is a pesticide, and the pollen isn't controlled. The growers have to control their spray legally. They can be fined if their spray gets off their property. But if that pollen, which is insecticidal, goes off their property, they don't face any sanction at all. And I think that's unfortunate and another reason why we should have labeling. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Arnold. I guess there are no other people desiring to have public comments, so we will move on now to our presentations from local community organizations. And first will be the Food Bank of San Luis Obispo, Carl Hansen. The executive director is here to speak with us. Thank you for being here, Mr. Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. Again, it's a pleasure to be here with you. I thank you for the invitation on the part of our board and the Food Bank. Just to give you kind of a quick recap of the year, last year when I was here, we had just incorporated Harvest Bag in South County into our operations, and I want to report that it's gone extremely well. It's been a wonderful, it's more than a partnership. It's really kind of the two organizations blending to become one. We're continuing all of their programs, and of course their volunteers and their donors and so forth have, for the most part, hung in there with the food bank and are energizing our operations as well. I estimate that about $65,000 in resources have been saved on an annual basis because of the two operations working out of one warehouse, for example, rather than two, and also the continuity of their wonderful programs that have been going on for 30 years entirely by volunteers in South County are continuing, and as I mentioned, helping out the food bank as well. Another thing that was a big event this year was the Hunger Awareness Day, and part of our long-range plan in the community is to be part of an educational process as well as a food delivery process in the county, getting food to low-income people. And I think Hunger Awareness Day gave us an opportunity, thanks to the wonderful cooperation of KSBY and the Tribune and so many other in the media, to tell stories and to educate the public not only about what the food bank does, but even more importantly, the reality of hunger in our county and low food security on the part of what now easily exceeds 30,000 people in our county. And so it was a neat opportunity to do that, as well as we raised about $120,000. And for the first time for a one-day event, that was pretty incredible. So we've been able to use that money to pass on to the agencies that we serve. We started a refrigeration grant so that those agencies that wanted to increase their ability, their capacity to deliver fruits and vegetables from the food bank would be expanded. And we find that a lot of them resist fresh products because they don't have a large enough storage for it, and they can't store enough to make sure everybody get some, and they have to make too many trips back to the food bank to get more. It's completely free, but they didn't have the capacity to store it. So we offered all of our agencies and the opportunity, and we were able to distribute about $30,000 in brand new refrigerators and freezers to a lot of our agencies. Some of the money was used to offer discounts to organizations that deal a lot, some of the agencies that have a high volume with the food bank. And, of course, a lot of it was used to increase our inventory so that we could provide more low-cost product or free product to the agencies that we serve. So increasing the nutritional value of the food is an important goal of ours as well. And to increase our percentage of fresh fruits and vegetables is an ongoing effort on my part to make sure that the options for low-income people are as good and as healthy as the options that the rest of us have. And the agencies play a very key role in that. So I notice the clock isn't going, but I'm going to stop there because I think it's about that time and see if you have any questions.
I've been reading on the national level that with the housing market in such turmoil that the shelves of a lot of local food banks throughout the country have, I guess, noticeably less supplies on their shelves. Are we experiencing that in San Luis Obispo County?
Well, we're experiencing it at the food bank. Not that we have less food, but because the only reason we don't is because of the generosity of our local people. The Hunger Awareness Day, for example, allowed us to purchase the food that we need, but that food is much more expensive to bring in than the kinds of food that we would get in the past, which would be largely donated food from all around the country, and particularly in the state of California, and food that we could make available at our shared maintenance prices to agencies, which is 14 cents a pound. So we've had to, in order to keep inventory for the agencies, go out and purchase food that is cheaper than wholesale. It's called co-op food, and make that available, but it's more than 14 cents a pound. So we're able to save money, but we're not getting the kinds of food that would really bring a big savings. A lot of the government, it's not only the economy or the housing situation where even though we seem to, the economy supposedly is doing well, we all know that those at the lower tiers of the economy, the low-income people, are growing in numbers and not doing as well as they would have done 2 or 3 years ago even. And there are many reasons for that. Also, the government, the USDA, that provide through the TFAP program, Emergency Food Program, has reduced what they give to food banks around the country by 40% over the last 3 years. So that's a lot of the headlines that you read have to do with the fact that we're just not getting as much free or low-cost food as we used to. And a lot of food banks don't even have a, what we call a co-op program. Well, they will go out and buy food for their agencies so that they can save the money, even though they have to pay more, and sometimes considerably more than 14 cents a pound.
So what's your shopping list look like?
Well, it's the, it's always the, when you say, are you talking about kinds of food? Okay. Things that are non-perishable, that are nutritious. People in the county are very generous, but they're not always mindful of buying nutritious food for low-income people. So, you know, we still get a lot of soda pop and sugar cereals and things like that, white bread and pastries. And we're grateful, but I think it's the education process that we want to become part of the solution and not part of the problem by making it so easy for people to get high sugar content, white flour products, and get things that are more healthy. So, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being here. We really appreciate that you've taken time on this day to be here with us.
Okay.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Oh, happy birthday. I guess that's, I was trying not to make a big deal about it, but. Oh, Carl, is there a phone number that people can call if they have, want to make a donation?
238.
Yeah.
Yes, 238-4664 is the food bank, and our website is slofoodbank.org.
Okay.
And I want to apologize to my colleagues for not sitting to hear your presentations as well. So, thank you.
Thank you. All right. If you want to make a donation or be somehow involved with the food bank, please call 238-4664. Next, we have the Atascadero Loaves and Fishes. Royce Lapp, president of that organization, is here to speak with us. Welcome, Mr. Lapp.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the invitation. I'd have to say I was a little bit quizzical when I was invited, and I had to ask, well, what's the connection of Loaves and Fishes? We're not a health agency. We provide groceries for people, and I was reminded, and that made me feel quite dumb, that food is very essential to good health. So I am glad to be here. Following Carl, I did tell him I was going to change my whole talk because I was going to be quite complimentary of the support we get from the food bank, but I'm not going to change it. Very briefly, we're not anywhere near the organization that you just heard, but the food bank. We serve a limited area, Atascadero, Templeton, Santa Margarita, Creston. That's it. And we provide groceries to low-income people twice a month. We have a menu that they can select from. We don't have some pantries that you may be aware of have boxes that they make up for a family, and that's it. We try to we involve the client comes in, and twice a month he can check off the items that they can use on our menu, which is the inventory of our pantry. And it's very effective. Occasionally we get special items that aren't on our menu, and we put them out on a free table that help themselves. But as Carl indicated, our menu consists of basic nutritional foods. You know, there's no filet mignon and items that people can get along without. The only meats that we provide are hot dogs, and occasionally the food bank will have frozen chickens that we can pick up. He did mention the 14 cents a pound, which might lead me into our financial situation. He mentioned collecting $120,000 on one money-raising venture, which he did share with us among many. Our total budget is about $115,000 for the year. We have no specific money-raising activities. Our income is derived from grants from governmental agencies, from the county, from the city of Atascadero, some from the federal government, grants from churches, donations from churches, civic groups, and the remainder is filled in with individual donations, private parties sending donations. And you ask for the food bank phone number. Our phone number is on the little brochure you should have in front of you. We serve over 1,000 clients each month. Now, a client is the head of household who comes in and picks up the groceries, and they can do that twice a month. Each household will average over four persons. So you can see the annual figure for last year was 16,000 people in our area that we provided groceries for. Now, to do that with such a low amount of money involved, we are 100% volunteers. We have no personnel costs. It takes about 150 different volunteers throughout the year to maintain our operation. Volunteers collect surplus food from grocery stores, our gleaners. That food then that is brought in has to be sorted and organized and stacked on the shelves in our pantry, broken down from large bags into small quantities that we can distribute. Another group of volunteers is the direct determination with each client as to what they need. And I need to point out that in addition to food, we do also provide auxiliary help where we think it's really help. We issue vouchers for haircuts. If somebody needs to get down to San Luis to apply for a job, bus tickets, vouchers for the thrift store, so that if they're going to go to the doctor or to apply for a job, they can have clothes that they that they need. And, of course, last winter, a lot of it was strictly to have clothes to keep them warm. Now, those vouchers are very limited. It can go very fast. But we're able to survive. You have any questions about our operation?
Hi, thank you for the presentation. A couple of questions. First of all, where do you mostly get your groceries?
Oh, I that was the part I told Carl I was going to skip, and I did it accidentally. We get, I would say, 30% of our groceries from direct food donations. Our gleaners pick up surpluses from the grocery store. This last weekend and the following weekend, we have big food drives where various service groups in town are in front of each of the four big grocery stores in town. And that we collect food just on Saturday and Sunday. And initially, primarily, that food is all used for our big Christmas program. And I did neglect to even mention our Christmas program, which will come up on the 20th of December. Last year, we served 365 families. 365. Again, with membership in each family, at least averaging 4 and 5. I don't have the exact number, but it's a large number of individuals, and what we provide there at the armory on the 20th is a basket of groceries, a box of groceries. We don't provide a turkey or ham, but we do include a $10 gift certificate for Food for Less, because many of our clients wouldn't know how to cook, wouldn't have the oven big enough to cook a turkey, and some we give them that choice.
How do you determine who gets the food? Do the people?
You might think that we're lax, because we do not insist on any documentation for income level. We maintain a record of income level strictly on the basis of what they tell us. And of course, we need that information for grant applications and just basic records of what we're doing. We suspect occasionally that because we don't insist on documentation of that, that maybe we're being used a little bit. But in my own mind, if I could identify 1% of our clients that are in that category, I'm happy to serve the other 99. Mm-hmm. And we do occasionally red tag clients who we think are abusing their privilege.
You mentioned in the brochure that you also provide some propane. Is that something you do
in the wintertime?
That's not to mention
that's especially true, because we have a lot of clients out in California Valley living in trailers and the backs of pickups. Yes, that's one of our...
Where does that come from? Do you purchase it, or is it...
We issue a voucher for $15, and that will get them a five-gallon tank at I don't know the name of it. It's the big one there on El Camino in Atascadero.
And finally, you mentioned that you also provide prescriptions. How does that work?
We are very limited. You're right. We do issue some vouchers for prescriptions, but we don't advertise that at all, because that could wipe out our whole budget so quickly. We do have one special fund that is created by one of the service clubs in town, and we limit our vouchers for prescriptions to that fund. When that's gone, it's gone. Mm-hmm. we insist, and we're very careful with all of our prescriptions so that the merchants realize that in no circumstance do they issue cash in lieu of this, of the voucher. And for the prescriptions, we talk directly to the pharmacy to get the exact dollar amount, and we write it for that. So we're a little careful.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Well, again, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being here. We really appreciate your taking time this evening. And that was the Atascadero Loaves and Fishes. Their phone number is 461-1504. And they can always use volunteers. They have a nice brochure here that says they need volunteers for interviewing, bagging, receptionist, data entry, gleaning. I guess that means going and getting the food, stocking shelves, repacking the bulk food, and cleaning. So if anybody's interested, please call them at 461-1504. Thank you. Okay, next up we have Jackie Sebro, Executive Director of the Paso Robles Loaves and Fishes. Welcome, Jackie.
Thank you. Good evening, Chairman and Board. Paso Robles Loaves and Fishes will be celebrating 25 years in April, so we're very excited and looking forward to that. We provide 4 days' worth of food using the government guidelines. So if our people are very careful and they half cup servings and the 6 to 8 ounces of protein or 6 ounces of protein a day from what we give them, they can eat for 4 days. And we just had, I meant to bring the handout, I'm sorry, 2 dietetic interns from Cal Poly make up a menu list for 4 days. For 2 people from what we provide, and it was really nice. And so we're working real hard to make sure that that does work out all the time. The co-op buying from Food Bank is our main way of purchasing food, and when I started at Loaves and Fishes 12 years ago, I had been a school food service director, and we bought co-op, and so I went over to Food Bank and I said, hey, you got to do this for us. The grocery store prices are killing us. And so it's the basic bulks, the fruits and the vegetables in cans that we purchase. And all the agencies that purchase through Food Bank have given Food Bank their grocery list. And then they go out and find those items that we need at the best prices. And they do a really good job of it. And that's mostly what I purchase through Food Bank. I hardly ever purchase what we call salvage at the shared maintenance because Loaves and Fishes only distributes nice cans of food. We don't do dents and we don't do out-of-date food. We are still a Christian organization, and we want every can of food that we put in someone's bag to say that you are a child of God, worthy of nice food. We want to make sure that the food says you are good and you are worthy of good food. We don't want them to say you're a dent, you're a throwaway person. The dented cans that do come in to our building go out front on a free shelf, and they decide whether they want to take those home as extra food or not. And so that's kind of how we do that. And so most of what goes into the Food Bank as salvage is not usable for us. And so it makes it kind of hard for us to use Food Bank in that manner. Our income is mostly from the churches and the people of Paso Robles. Once in a while, we ask the city for a grant when we need something special, but we've promised them we will not go to them for our operating funds, so it's only for special things. We do get an emergency food and shelter grant through the federal government each year to help with purchasing emergency food, but everything else we have comes from the people and the churches of Paso Robles, and our budget is about $115,000 a year. and I'm about one-third of the budget, and the rest of it goes all into program. And I try to make sure that that's about how it goes, that we don't spend, we have to spend more money on food than we spend on my salary, or I rearrange the budget, because I think it's really important that that's where the money goes. A number of years ago, when we did ask the city for a grant, they wanted to know how many clients we had that lived within the city limits. So in 2004, we had 5,000 active clients at Loaves and Fishes who lived within the Paso Robles city limits. I haven't asked anybody to count since then because that's a very tedious job. We take care of about 1,600 to 2,000 families a month. We're seeing 20 to 30 families a day. So it's very taxing on my volunteers. We are seeing that many people in 2 hours. The 3 days we were open before Thanksgiving, we took care of 150 families. We average about 100, anywhere from 80 to 100 volunteers. There's always room for more volunteers. We have folks who stock the shelves. In the morning, we go in and stock the shelves. And then in the afternoon, we empty the shelves as we bag the groceries. Every client who comes in is interviewed. One of the special things we do for our people is listen to them. We work with marginalized people who are often the invisible people on the street. And so one of the gifts we give them is eye contact and actually sitting down and hearing what they have to say and listening to them. And after we've listened to them, then we have a checklist of the kinds of food we offer, and we go through the checklist and build a grocery order for them. And then that order is put together in the pantry, and they're given their food. But it's very important to me that they're listened to, because sometimes we find out they really don't need food. They need the acknowledgement that they're worthy to be listened to and to have someone acknowledge them as a person. We are working on extra sources of financing to do more than just food right now. I have $300 a month for personal hygiene and $300 a month for diapers. All the rest of my program money has to go to food. And so we're trying to do something about finding bus ticket money to get people to appointments in San Luis and other things along that line. We rely on the police department for gasoline. We rely on Salvation Army for clothing. And so that's kind of where we are right now. But the food need is so great that we've had to pull back and just do food. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
You say you get most of your money from organizations in Paso, from churches.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get enough money? Do you need more of a campaign out there?
I can always spend money. But, yeah, we do need. We do have a need. We don't do fundraisers. Mm-hmm. When people offer to do fundraisers for us, we take them. But that's one of the things we don't do is fundraisers. And we're always willing to accept funds, and they are needed. A lot of our folks who started with us 25 years ago are starting to pass away and retire, and so their ability to give, those who are retiring, has become less. And so we're needing to build up a new giving base.
One more question. Do you ever network with the Atascadero Loaves and Fishes, because you've got, you know, you're in the kind of the same area, and if one organization needs some product that the other one has, do you ever
share? We've traded vegetables for beans, and we've traded, uh-huh. You know, we work together. We stay in contact. The pantry coordinator there and I keep in contact, and many times we've said, oh, I've got too many cases of this, and of the donated food, and we've swapped back and forth, or they get too much salvage at one store, and so we go pick it up, or we get too much and we share with them.
Thank you.
We do try to do that. Thank you.
I had a question. On your menu, you said you had you provided a menu for 4 days.
Yes.
What kind of protein would be in that kind of a menu? You don't have any fresh food?
Yes.
Oh, do you have fresh
food? Yeah, we have freezers, and so and I have a large walk-in. That was one of my big requirements when we got our new building. The ladies were having to bend and twist pulling produce out of little refrigerators, and I said no. We do hot dogs and ground turkey, and we have canned tuna and salmon and any other kind of canned meats that come in. And then what we really love is, I found it interesting, Royce said something about no filet mignon. Well, sometimes we do have filet mignon at Loaves and Fishes because people are cleaning out their freezers, and you never know what's coming. Right before the fair, everybody's got to get rid of everything in their freezer so that they can put their new fair animal in the freezer. And so we get what's left of last year's fair animal, and you just never know what they haven't eaten yet. And so it's kind of exciting around there when we're passing out these really nice roasts and steaks. So you never know what you're going to get at Loaves and Fishes.
That's great. Could you give me your phone number?
238-4742.
And you need volunteers?
Volunteers.
Food and money.
Food, money, we'll take it all.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Seabrook. Just to repeat, if you're interested in helping the Paso Robles Loaves and Fishes, the phone number is 238-4742, and they need volunteers and food and money, like everyone. Next, we have the Salvation Army. Beth Quaintance is here. She is the she's representing San Luis Obispo County Salvation Army. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. I've enjoyed hearing the three food organizations talk in front of me. Salvation Army is also one of those food distributors throughout the county. Here in San Luis Obispo County, we have 6 Salvation Army service extension units. And the purpose for a service extension unit is to provide short-term emergency assistance. We have units in Cambria, Atascadero, Paso Robles, Morro Bay, San Luis Obispo, and also South County. Our South County office covers Pismo Beach south to Napomo, a large territory. San Luis Obispo covers San Luis Obispo and Los Osos. Or Avila Beach, I'm sorry. Morro Bay covers Los Osos, Morro Bay, and Cayucas. Cambria is kind of off there in Never Never Land. They take care of their own with a phone number. They don't have an actual office. Paso Robles, we cover Paso Robles to Bradley out to Shandon. And Atascadero covers Atascadero, Templeton, all the way out to California Valley and Creston. So we are spread out throughout the county. As San Luis Obispo field rep for Salvation Army, we are trying to, I'm trying to get all the offices to provide much of the same services. And that depends on our bell ringing campaign. I'm sure you've seen the bells and the red kettles out there. That is a program that was started in around 1878 in San Francisco. One of the Salvation Army captains wanted to feed the hungry in San Francisco for Christmas, and he couldn't think how to gather the funds to buy the food to do that. So he took a kettle from one of the ships, and that's how our campaign started. That is the only source of fundraising that we do as far as Salvation Army. So when you see those kettles for 30 days, give or take, we're out ringing the bells. And that's what funds each of our service extensions here in this county. 90% of that money stays in that location. For instance, when the volunteers in Paso Robles ring the bell, 90% of that money stays in Paso Robles for me to use to help the clients in my territory. When the bell is rung in San Luis Obispo, 90% stays here. We are a church. We're a Christian church. And 10% of our kettle take, we tithe to our headquarters office, where they use that money for programs, various programs. They also do disaster response. So the 10% is a blessing that we're able to send for the good of the Salvation Army. We, as a county, provide an awful lot of food to residents here. The major food units are South County. They feed about 500 people a day, give or take, and that's on a busy day. San Luis Obispo is a major food distributor here in San Luis. We have Morro Bay, major food. Atascadero and Paso Robles, Atascadero does not distribute food. They share an office with Loaves and Fishes and provide the short-term emergency services that each unit provides as well. Paso Robles, we will start supplementing food early next year. We have been doing some of it, but we would never do a food drive in Paso Robles or Atascadero because Loaves and Fishes is the main provider of food. Salvation Army is not here to step on anybody's toes. We have enough to do with what services we provide. Speaking of those services, every year we provide eviction prevention to our clients. We provide utility assistance. That includes PG&E, propane, the gas company, even wood if that's the source of energy that, you know, a household is using. We provide bus tickets, and it sounds like I need to share some bus tickets with Jackie at Loaves and Fishes. And I'll do that, Jackie.
Thank you.
We provide prescriptions. We have recently helped a young lady that Medi-Cal did not come through on her prescription, and it was a hefty price. We were able to help through the Paso Robles office. So we do some of that. We have a focus. I keep going back to Paso Robles because I do the social services work in that office as well, even though I take care of the whole county. So I pick on Paso a lot. We also, in this area, this year, were able to send 46 children on a rented bus, very nice tour bus, to camp, Salvation Army Christian Camp in Malibu. All of this comes from the kettle money. We do have some monthly donors that will send checks to various offices in the county, which is great. This year for Christmas is the busiest time of year for the Salvation Army. We start planning in probably September. We get really active. Most of the offices use volunteer bell ringers. We all desperately need more bell ringers. It's fun. You can talk to your friends. And everybody thanks you for doing it that approaches the kettle. So we do need volunteer bell ringers to get us through the 22nd of December. We also, this Christmas, will be sending or giving out over 1,700 food boxes in this county as Salvation Army. And it will be food that has been purchased through the food bank, or maybe people have donated it to one of our offices. We also will be providing 2,500 toys, or 2,500 children with toys in this county that is separate from anything anybody else is doing. Those are children not on any other list. Our offices have been working in conjunction with other organizations. In Paso Robles, Salvation Army is working with the Toy Bank and with Coats for Kids. We come together next Saturday and do a major giveaway. We will be providing in Paso Robles 670 food boxes. That's how many families have signed up for the toy bank. In Atascadero, Salvation Army provides the gift certificates that Royce had talked about from the Atascadero Loaves and Fishes. They put a great deal of money toward those $10 gift certificates. We will be providing $10 gift certificates as well in Paso Robles. That's quite a hefty chunk of change when you look at $10 for those 670 families. Salvation Army here in San Luis Obispo will be providing 50 food boxes to the Housing Authority so that they can give food to the people they feel that need it. Also, we're very proud that some volunteers that we have in Atascadero, Paso Robles, and here in San Luis Obispo will be visiting for some the second year in a row. They'll be visiting nursing homes and hospitals, providing a small gift and conversation to those that may be forgotten on the holiday. We have Christmas outreach for seniors. Paso Robles, we take food to several senior complexes once a month to make sure that they have that little extra. And those seniors do like popcorn and brownie mix, I've been told. The other thing that we do during Christmas is we have an emergency vehicle here in the county, and it is housed in Paso Robles. We respond to search and rescue. Whatever emergency comes up, we go out and take care of first responders. But at this time of the year, the canteen has gone out and has served well over 4,000 cups of hot chocolate and coffee at Walk Around the Lake in Atascadero and also at Vine Street this past Saturday night. So we are busy. We do need volunteers. We do need donations, and we need people to ring our bells. And they can call my office, and I can give them the correct office number to contact. My office number is 238-9591. Can I answer any questions?
Yes, thank you very much. I've learned a lot. We've donated to the Salvation Army for years, and we get mailings from, and where do those come from? Where do those fundraising mailings come from?
Is it a very nice envelope with sometimes colored pictures in it?
We have that too, yeah, sometimes.
Okay. Depending on what part of the county you live in, if you get a letter that has the address of your local Salvation Army office, it's something we've mailed out to our longtime contributors, trying to get that final Christmas push in there, remember us kind of thing. If you get an envelope from headquarters,
I think that's where it comes from.
Then they are sending that out, and the money will go to our Southern California division. If we were to need additional money, they could provide what we call a grant from that. But 90% stays here if you mail it here.
And the headquarters is where?
Southern California. It's in Los Angeles.
That's where it comes from, yeah.
If you get something locally, it will stay locally, you know, stay in your local Salvation Army office.
I'm glad to know that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You mentioned that there's not an office in Cambria. Is there a representative, someone that we can call? Because I know there used to be, and I don't know what the protocol is now.
Yes, there still is, and I didn't bring the phone numbers. I apologize for that. I didn't know how much time I would have to give phone numbers. We have Bob. He is in Cambria. He's been doing this for years. He's still there. He will take phone messages. You leave a message, he will call a client back or a volunteer, what have you. They are in desperate need of bell ringers over there as well. But they do have a program. They support the Cambria Anonymous Neighbors. Salvation Army provides funds for their gift cards that they give out. So we're active with all of our fellow organizations. We do a lot of referrals. When clients come in, I know that Jackie at Loaves and Fishes has referred them. They will say that. If they're not from our area, we refer out. Sometimes Paso Robles, we do help with the Cambria area because it's hard for the clients to get to Bob and make a connection. But we all help. And there's an increased need, I know, because of Cambria. I've had more phone calls than ever, and the client need has grown so very much. In the last, I would say probably month, just in Paso Robles, I've had 5 first-time clients come in because their house is in foreclosure. And it's really sad because those folks are not accustomed to asking for help. They don't want to come and see us. And when they come in, they're scared. They're, because their whole life is changing. Not only do they need help getting the electric on or keeping it on, they're losing their home. And we can't help them not go into foreclosure. I'd love to, but it's not something that we can do. And I'm sure every agency is seeing that. There's more people living in their car. There's, today I know of one man, he and his family, their house foreclosed today. And the shelters are full, and it's hard. It's really, really hard for the county.
Thank you very much. I guess there's no other questions, but I'll just repeat that the number is 238-9591, and you will be referred to the phone number in your community for the Salvation Army. They need bell ringers, I guess, in all the communities, and, of course, contributions are always welcome. All right, then now we'll move on to the San Luis County Drug and Alcohol Services. Star Graber is here to talk to us. She's the director of, she's the division manager. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. My name is Star Graber, and I'm the division manager at County Drug and Alcohol Services. And as you know, it's the holiday time, time for stress and fatigue and drinking and alcohol and drugs more and more. The stress of the holidays, it's happy, it's busy, it's lonely for some folks, depressed for others. Childhood memories about the holidays, perhaps that include family addictions. Old patterns of partying with friends or family members and so forth. So it's a particularly vulnerable time for folks in our community. Stress has been shown by research to be highly related to drug and alcohol use and abuse. It's related to the starting of drugs and alcohol. It's related to continuing alcohol and drug use, and it's also related to relapse after even long periods of abstaining from drugs and alcohol. So it's a particularly vulnerable time for folks in our community. I want to give some advice, and you have a red pamphlet in front of you, some advice about how to have healthy ways to avoid the holiday stress. Keep your goals and expectations reasonable. Pace yourself and keep it simple. Enjoy the time with caring and supportive people. Reach out to others and make new friends. Be with those that are safe and sober for you. Save some time for yourself. You've been talking all about eating healthy, exercise, getting rest and sleep is always really important during these stressful holiday times. Do something for others. You've been talking about volunteering and all of the opportunities that we have. This is a really good time to think about others, creating a list of your gratitudes during the past year can help you stay positive and focused. Hosting parties. It's very important, and I would be remiss without saying this, to designate a sober driver. Be sure that that driver is sober and plans to stay sober. Also then allow friends to stay over if they've had too much to drink. Don't drink and drive during this time of high risk. Serve non-alcoholic beverages, and you have some great recipes in that red pamphlet. If you or someone you know is struggling with stress, depression, or substance abuse, then seek help. And so I'm here to talk a little bit about some of the resources. The first thing I would encourage folks to do, if you or others are struggling with substance abuse, is to learn all that you can about addiction and substance abuse. There's a lot of information nowadays on the internet, in your local resources, and I'm going to give you some websites here in a few minutes. Learn all that you can about it. Enlist the help of others. There's certainly professionals, doctors, support groups, other family members who may be able to help you if you have folks in your family who are struggling with substance abuse. Also, if someone is willing to get some help, it takes courage to get that help any time of the year, but especially this time of the year. And it's really important to offer to go get help with the person so that they make it into the treatment and support groups that are most important to them. I do have some resources. I made a slide, a couple slides for the audience here. Of course, Drug and Alcohol Services is a county division of the health agency. I have some, I know that most, a lot of folks are, we're starting to see an increase in the use of websites. So I want to give our website address there at www.slodas.org. You also see some phone numbers. Drug and Alcohol Services has offices in Rio Grande, San Luis Obispo, and Atascadero with their phone numbers. We have walk-in clinics in all of those regions that are available. I wanted to let folks know that the walk-in clinics are not the only time that we can see folks. All of our intake forms are on the website. On the previous screen, if you don't mind. There we go. On the previous screen there is the website, so all of our intake forms are there. They could fill them out in the privacy of their homes, bring them in or call, and get an appointment. You don't need to come during the walk-in clinics. That's not the only way to access us. Lots of different ways to call for an appointment. Go ahead and go forth. The next slide also shows county mental health. If you're struggling with depression and stress, perhaps it's moving into some dangerous areas, the phone number there is also available, 781-4700. Private therapists are also available to handle drug and alcohol issues, and you would look into the phone book under psychologists or marriage and family therapists. During this time, what's really wonderful is the 12-step community and the 12-step meetings are available. A lot of the organizations are having marathon meetings and social activities to counteract and create that social environment. So I have some phone numbers there, the 12-step central office phone number. They also have a website, www.slaa.org. And that shows where the meetings are here locally in San Luis Obispo County, and also has some other resources listed there. North County Connection, Cambria Connection, and the Alano Club all have meetings, and you see the phone numbers listed up on the screen. Call hotline or 211, and you have the hotline website as well under slohotline.org. And so there are resources and specialists to deal with substance abuse. It doesn't have to be you. Your own personal use, you could be concerned about a family member and want to seek help with any of those organizations would also help you as the family member. So that's it for my presentation. I did also give the Health Commission a paper on detoxification. I'm open to answering questions about that, but it is a paper that's now available.
Star, on the resources, hotline's available 24/7, right?
Yes.
And so that's one thing I wanted to see, that people really understood.
Yes.
That
on weekends, evenings, that's usually when it hits.
That's correct. That's correct. And one of the things, we're working with Hotline. We've put in an application to especially train their volunteers and so forth to handle substance abuse callers when they call, because you're absolutely right. Most of the crisis when it hits is on the weekends or in the evenings and so forth, and wanting that extra help, and Hotline would be a great resource for that.
Thank you very much for coming and presenting this information to us and to anybody who might be watching us. It's so appropriate for this time of year, and we want everyone to have a happy holiday season, but that's not always possible. So it's good to know there's help out there. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, Commissioner Hetherington, go ahead.
It's not really a question for you, Star, but I just wanted to make sure that now that we have the report and planning for addressing the detox needs, that we bring that back on a future date and go into it a little bit in detail. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Have safe and sober holidays.
Thank you. The next presentation is from the EOC Prado Daycare Center, or Day Center rather, and the Homeless Shelter. Jody Smith, the Director for Homeless Services, is here to talk to us. Welcome, Ms. Smith.
Good evening, and thank you for inviting me. And it was wonderful to see my dear friends and listen to them speak about their wonderful agencies, and they are all our partner agencies, and we rely on each and every one of them for services. EOC Homeless Services has three components. We have the Prado Day Center, which is a day shelter for folks to come into. We serve breakfast and lunch 7 days a week. People are able to take showers, get their mail. We also have a mobile medical van that's provided by the Community Health Center of the Central Coast, so we do have medical treatment on site. CHC also has a case manager on site. Transitions Mental Health Association is coming on site 1 day a week, and they're seeing clients, and it's quite wonderful. I know Prado is working to provide their breakfast program, and we need to have donations made for that program because it doesn't have any secured funding, but it's turned out to be just a wonderful enhancement to the Prado Day Center. A second component of homeless services is the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter. The shelter provides 49 beds nightly, and we have a partnership with the Interfaith Coalition for the Homeless. They provide, depending on the size of the church, there's 14 members in the ICH. Generally, it's around 30 beds a night, but sadly, our beds are filled every night, and the homeless situation in our county is growing. We'll now be having people who have had their homes foreclosed on. They'll be going back into rentals. The rentals will have more of a supply of probably working people that were in housing. So our rental supply will begin to shrink. As the rental supply shrinks, it's supply and demand, the rents will go up, and it will price a lot of the homeless folks that we just got housed right back out of housing, and they may be coming back to the shelter. It's very difficult to house folks in the community when you have such a low inventory of rental housing. I brought with me also the needs list for Christmas for the community homeless. There are lists at the Prado Day Center as well as the shelter, and I will have these packets for you tonight. I would like the community to know that what is always needed are warm jackets, mittens, hats, gift cards so people can buy shoes that fit them, socks, warm underwear, children's clothing. So I would recommend that rather than someone going out and buying something that may or may not fit someone, that they buy a gift card at Mervyn's or Walmart or somewhere that someone can get good value for that item. The shelter does let children and adults put a wish for an item that they would really love to have, and we have those lists available to the public. The third component to homeless services is our case management program. I have case managers in the North County, and they have offices at the Atascadero Loaves and Fishes site, so they are where people come in and need their services. We also have a case manager that goes to the Paso Robles site for Loaves and Fishes, and they will take referrals from Loaves and Fishes or be there and do drop in with client hours. In the South County, we have case managers at the Manhattan office near the Department of Social Services, and they're there for folks to come in and access homeless services through the case management programs. The case managers really do the footwork in housing in our community through the shelter and the outreach offices. They're busy, busy, busy with huge caseloads. They rely on the Salvation Army and Catholic Charities to help keep people housed, because both of those nonprofits have eviction prevention dollars and money to pay for energy costs, because oftentimes someone will pay the gas bill and won't have enough money for the rent, or they'll pay the rent and they won't have enough money for the gas bill, and that causes people to become at risk of homelessness, and oftentimes the case managers will step in to help keep someone in housing. It's vital. We refer to drug and alcohol services, to North County Connection with our clients, to mental health to help keep them sober and address their issues of depression. We're living in some interesting times, and I worry that many people are going to be turning to drug and alcohol to soothe themselves through these trying times. And it's vital that we all work together to make sure that folks that are at risk can access these services, can access mental health or private counseling. And I want to thank you for allowing me to speak tonight. And on behalf of our executive director, Ms. Steinberg, and our board of directors, thank you very much and happy holidays. Do you have questions?
Yeah, I have just something I wanted you to comment on. I do read the minutes from the Vulnerable Families that committee that I know Star chairs, and that you guys started that breakfast program. Well, I think what's interesting, I'd like to hear about some of the results that they've seen at the center just by doing that simple intervention of providing breakfast.
Well, it's very interesting. You know, we all believe that breakfast kind of sets you up for the rest of the day, and it gives you energy, and it gives you food in your stomach. And what we've noticed at the Prado Day Center is the attitude and the mood of the clients has changed. They're happier. It has affected their outlook on life. It's quite interesting. They've had great interactions with the volunteers that are providing breakfast. They're getting along. You know, we've got this congregate day program with up to 100, 120 people a day, and it makes a big difference when people start their day with food in their stomach. You know, we do have a wonderful lunch program with the People's Kitchen, but the lunch isn't served until noon, and if that client is not going to the shelter and having dinner, that lunch might have been their only meal. So for many, coming in the morning and having the breakfast has made so much difference. It's helped people that take medication to be able to metabolize their medications better because they have more food in their stomach. It's helped our diabetics stabilize their blood sugar. It has helped a lot of our heart patients that really need nutrition in their body. We have a lot of clients with congestive heart failure, and they need to have food, good nutrition, a place to sit down and rest their feet. And the breakfast program's just been fabulous, and we need to have the money to support it, to keep it going. It's just wonderful. We do rely heavily on the food bank so that we can purchase our low-cost foods, but there's other things that we would love to have, fresh fruit. You know, we kind of take that for granted, but, you know, an orange or an apple is a really wonderful thing to have first thing in the morning, or milk to put on your cereal. So I do want to thank everyone who has volunteered with the breakfast program and encourage anyone that would like to volunteer with the breakfast program to please do so. Also, if anyone would like to be a meal provider for the shelter, they can call the shelter office at 781-3993. The Prado Day Center number is 786-0617. Yes.
Jody, how much does it cost to serve a client breakfast? So if say, somebody wanted to donate for one day for everybody there, what would...
For just for breakfast? You know, breakfast is not a costly meal. When you think about buying, you know, a couple dozen eggs and making scrambled eggs and keeping them warm and bringing them in a dish where they'll stay warm and serving them, you know, that's not costly. Just bringing several dozen bagels is not costly. 4 or 5 gallons of milk. I think that you could probably do breakfast for 40 to 50 is what they've been averaging, for probably a dollar a serving or less. Often our meal providers at the shelter provide a dinner on the weekends or a holiday for 120 and up to 130 people, and that averages around $175. So it's really not that much. You can go with a group of friends and everyone take a piece of it. You know, you can have one person buy a couple loaves of bread, another person buy a couple boxes of cereal, 2 or 3 gallons of milk, and just spread it amongst friends. But it's doable, it's wonderful, and the benefits are just fabulous.
So would it be possible to say, like, I'm on the board of this local chapter of the Surfrider Park, chapter wanted to come and provide breakfast one morning. We could either bring the ingredients to you, or we would come and we would cook it, or...
Well, the Prado Day Center does not have kitchen facilities. What you bring in, if you had an electric griddle, we could plug it in and flip pancakes. They don't have, you know, the big freestanding commercial stove. But you could make pancakes. If you had a waffle iron, you could bring that and make waffles because it's easy to serve. Electric frying pan, you could do eggs in an electric frying pan or bring them in something where they're already warm. But it's a wonderful way to help someone, and breakfast makes a huge difference.
I have a couple of questions. First of all, how many, you said there's 49 shelter beds plus 30-some-odd shelter beds that you talked about. Is that what's in the county? Is this it for shelter beds in the county?
The El Camino Homeless Organization has an additional 30 beds in Atascadero. And for emergency homeless shelters, that's it. It's a finite number. The women's shelter have their battered women's shelter beds, and that's also a finite number.
Do you find that many people are living in their cars or living in the...
Yes.
Okay.
We have a lot of folks that live in their cars, especially people that have pets.
Mm-hmm.
Pets, for many, I know for myself, are members of my family, and it is very difficult for someone that finds themselves homeless to part with their cat or their dog. So many, many people who otherwise might be coming in for services are staying in their car with their pets.
Do you have any idea on the numbers of that?
We did a homeless enumeration, and we hand counted several years ago 2,400 people in our county. That was people we could count. And I have a feeling within the last 2.5 years that number has really grown. I'll bet you if we turn around and do another count, we're going to be closer to 3,000 or more, maybe 4,000.
And these are 3,000 people living in vehicles?
Vehicles, campgrounds, people's garages, tents. I used to do home visits when I was a case manager. I have been to campgrounds, creek beds, tents, sheds in people's ranches where people are living. I have seen families doubled up, tripled up, quadrupled up. Cambria, I've done home visits where there is not very much rental housing at all, but you have a lot of service industry workers. There's families that are 3 and 4 families to a house. You know, those, if your name is not on the lease and you're staying there, technically you're homeless. You're just there by the grace of the person who is paying the rent. We have many, many, many families and single individuals living in motels in our communities. Paso has many small motels. The problem is if it's a holiday weekend or it's during the time of the fair or wine festival, those rents for that motel room go up, and after that event's over, they go back down, and the homeless people go back and rent those rooms until their money runs out. But we have a very serious problem in our community, and we need affordable housing, affordable rental housing, and we need it for our service industry people. Because it's workforce housing is enough of an issue with teachers and firemen and policemen. It's even tougher if you work in a motel or you work in a restaurant, bussing tables and washing dishes. It's very, very difficult to get housing.
Also, meal providers. Do you have organizations like hospitals or organizations that have kitchens that can prepare batches of food and bring them in? And do you have calendars set up where these people come in?
We have a calendar that is set up, and Cheryl Kazir, who is our AmeriCorps worker, is in charge of the meals. She's our volunteer coordinator for the shelter. You can reach her at 541-6351, and she has the calendar. Dolly Scruggs, who is the supervisor for the staff for the shelter, also has a copy of that calendar. And if you can't reach Cheryl, you can call Dolly at 781-3993. Many service organizations, churches, private individuals will prepare meals and bring them into the shelter. And we do schedule out those days. People's Kitchen also has a meals program. And I don't have their contact person's number on me at the moment, but you can reach People's Kitchen through the Prado Day Center, and they would have the meal providers and the schedule for the Prado Center, which provides the lunch. And they'd also be able to give you a date for breakfast if you so wished.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And I brought you all wish lists. And these are available through the shelter, the case management program, and the Prado Day Center. Thank you so much.
I was just going to ask you how we could, how you said the wish list was available to the public. How do they access that list? Is it on your website?
No, this particular list, the general needs, the generic needs are on the website, but the specifics to the client, if it's a shelter client, it would be through the shelter. If it's a Prado client, it would be through the Prado Day Center. But we've got the identified person and their need.
Okay. If anybody's interested in helping with those wish lists, then they need to contact either the Prado Center. And you gave us so many phone numbers. I'm trying to jot them down,
well,
but I think I've lost those.
I'm providing you with a pamphlet on the list.
Okay.
And also gift cards, I can't tell you how valuable those are for a dinner, for a movie, for a pair of shoes at Payless. But we really like to give all of the clients at Christmas time a movie pass, and even if it's fast food, a dinner certificate, so they can go out, go to a movie, and have dinner somewhere. because it's just a wonderful thing to be able to do for someone who otherwise would never be able to have that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for all the efforts of EOC. So many of us don't realize that things we take for granted are not available to apparently around 3,000 people in our county. That's astounding. So we appreciate your work, and we appreciate your being here to talk with us tonight. And I guess we have the wish list. Thank you for the wish list. Okay, our last presenter tonight is Lisa Frazier. She's from the San Luis Obispo Child Abuse Prevention, SLOCAP, and is their executive director. And welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commission members. I really appreciate the invitation to come before you tonight to talk about the Child Abuse Prevention Council, or SLOCAP, as we call it. I'm going to give you some postcards here. If they're part of the presentation, but I just wanted to do a quick overview about SLOCAP and what we provide to the community of San Luis Obispo County. We are an organization that functions as a nonprofit. We provide community education to the San Luis Obispo County community on the issue of protecting children and what child abuse and neglect is. And the next slide, that's our picture of our board of directors. We're a happy group. But basically, the mandate that we meet is to deliver programs and activities where we have an interagency forum to coordinate the prevention of child abuse and neglect, and also to promote public awareness of abuse and neglect in the county of San Luis Obispo. On the next slide, the other mandate is that we encourage and facilitate training of our local professionals in the detection and treatment and prevention of child abuse and neglect. We also recommend improvement in the services to families and of the victims of those crimes. And also we encourage and facilitate community support for child abuse and neglect programs. And these are just all part of what our organization has been mandated to do according to the welfare and institution codes. So the next slides will talk about those projects that were identified by community members in San Luis Obispo County who felt like we needed to bring these prevention education programs into our schools. And this is one called the Talking About Touching program. We reach over 1,800 kindergarten-aged children every year in all regions of San Luis Obispo County. And we do that by complete grant-funded dollars, and we also bring it to special needs children because they also are victims of child abuse and neglect as well. And also we have a pilot program that's being funded to do a reinforcement program for the second grade students in San Luis Coastal School District. Our hope is to have it go out throughout the entire county in the next year or two, and because it's so important that we reach not only the children but the parents of children to understand this very, very complicated and sensitive issue. The other program that we deliver into San Luis Obispo County is the Baby Think It Over Doll program. And a lot of us are very familiar with that program because it does have the computer dolls that are quite interesting to see out in the community. They are in all our high schools, depending on the teacher and who's teaching that year. Sometimes it gets a little cumbersome because they are quite, they're bulky, and they have you have to make sure that the students engage with them in a way that they're learning. But it's been a very successful program for teenagers to really look at how parenting is a consequence if you have a child during your teen years, and to allow them to really explore and communicate with each other as well as with their teacher supervising the discussion. And it's been a very well-received project since 1998. The other projects that we do are we work with our Attorney General's office here in California to do Safe from the Start. And this is basically an outreach that brings education in the field about where domestic violence is a primary contributor to child abuse. We don't think of that maybe that way, but we do know that when children are living in a domestic violent home, they don't have to be physically hit to suffer any of that drama, but just witnessing it and actually seeing it occur in their home on an ongoing basis, children will suffer emotionally. They will suffer developmentally. We know this due to the science that's been brought to us by Dr. Bruce Perry. He came in our community back in 2004 and talked to us about how when children are in their primary years of 0 to 5, are living in homes that are violent, we know that their physical and brain development will suffer for that. And what happens is that they'll enter into our school systems with a lot of learning problems, as well as a lot of social emotional problems. So we're really trying to pursue and explore that whole concept of really educating our, not only our parents, but our professionals about understanding that initiative. And our next slide, I do want to say that FLOCAP does continue to provide free public forums into the community, that we are constantly bringing current and emerging issues about child abuse and neglect. So we have that constant dialogue. We really resist having the concept of child abuse and neglect being under the radar screen, because it's so easy to react when these horrible incidences happen, and they do happen, as opposed to coming from a prevention manner. The next slide, we'll talk about the mandated reporter training, and this is what we deliver into the community of San Luis Obispo on a regular basis. It is about the mandated reporter law and what those reporters must do by law to report their concerns of child abuse and neglect to our Child Welfare Services Division. I have done this for 8 years now personally. This has been my one direct service into San Luis Obispo County, and I can tell you that it constantly impresses me how little employers do to prepare people to go out and be mandated reporters. Not all employers, but a lot of employers do not prepare their mandated reporters to go out and do the work that they have to do. They sign a paper saying, yes, I know I'm supposed to report child abuse, but they really don't get the training to know what is the first step you do. What is the phone number you call? Just simple basic things that I've learned that need to be reinforced, just like any other training and education component for any profession. So we continue to do this, and it's free to the community. This past year, I've trained over 800 people. This is the most I've ever done since I've done this job. I really encourage any employer who has services to children and families to make that part of their ongoing orientation and training for all employees. And the next slide, we also provide postpartum depression support line services, which allows anybody to call and get an appointment with a qualified therapist. We also provide free, immediate therapy appointments for any pregnant or postpartum women who feel like they really are in an anxious and acute state. We know in the real world you do not get an appointment with any mental health person that quick, and we serve about 10 to 15 women a year who see that they're really struggling with their pregnant and postpartum issues. And the next slide, Beginnings, is a fairly new initiative that I've been overseeing, and that is on the issue of perinatal substance abuse. Martha's Place, I put them down in the little logo at the bottom, is an outcome of that. Basically, that operates very separately from SLOCAP, but I do participate on the oversight committee of Martha's Place to make sure that they're functioning in a manner that's productive. And also, the cards I handed out are a brand new outreach. What we have determined is that we are targeting young women and men too, between the ages of 16 through 24, because through the public health or birth records, we know that a majority of the young people giving birth to children in that age group are who we need to educate, who we need to reach out to educate them about the consequences of drinking alcohol, as well as using any other substances during pregnancy. This website that you see on the postcard there is a brand new website. It's just been launched. It's targeting the young people, the YouTube generation. It's not for us other folks. And we're having a very good response from those who are participating on it, as well as recently I just met with Friday Night Live, which is a program in Drug and Alcohol Services, This is your outreach to all your teenagers and high school age students out here in the county. And we're going to utilize those students as ambassadors to help promote this message into the schools as amongst the peers. So we're very excited about that partnership. And I think the next slide, basically we're very engaged with public awareness. This is a very famous campaign that went out about 1999, where we work with Cal Poly Art and Design students to create messages about prevention of child abuse, and this is one way we like to educate the community. It's not just about physical abuse. It's not just about sexual abuse. It's also about emotional abuse and also domestic violence as well. So at our next slide, I think, how do we do this? Well, we do get funding from the Children's Trust Fund. This is the birth certificate fees that are collected in our county that go into the local Children's Trust Fund. That's what really supports the office and allows us to do this work, as well as providing continuing education services. And also, I work at about three-quarter time, and I have an administrative manager to do this. And this, we grant write, we fundraise, we get donations. All of the education projects I'm sharing with you today are really brought into our county through those efforts. And we have to really continually seek those funds and bring them in to allow them to be offered in a consistent manner. And I think that, I'm not sure, I think the next one, oh, it just demonstrates that about our grant funds make up about 35% of our budget, our membership fees about 5%, donations 5%, and of course our fundraising efforts. I always like to acknowledge that the annual drum circuit competition is a fundraiser that is put on by the drum circuit business on behalf of SLOCAP, and they make it possible for us to have those extra dollars. How do we spend our days? But basically we're educating local, state, and national legislators about the issues of child abuse. We also inform the community about why child abuse occurs. We oversee the delivery of all the programs I just offered before you today. We also manage fundraising activities and write grants as needed to support all of these activities that I just showed to you this evening. And but going forward, I also wanted to highlight some new initiatives that we're associated with recently. Together We Will is a parent shared leadership training. Like parent education, parents need to be educated about how to be civically engaged with the system so they can advocate on behalf of the human services that they receive here in this county, as well as partner with those agencies on how to improve the human services that we have in this county. We're very excited about it because it's long in coming to have parents be those folks that are part of that evaluative system of how we deliver human services in our county. Also, family resource centers. We're here to promote that we really see family resource centers as a primary form of prevention of child abuse. We do have actively operating family resource centers all throughout this county. We may not think of them as family resource centers, but they do self-identify themselves as family resource centers. And we would doing everything we can to help coordinate that effort in a way so we can have our local legislators as well as our key stakeholders in this community understand that family resource centers are a critical part of providing primary prevention of child abuse and family support services. And also, last but not least, I'm very proud of this, is our Child Death Review Team program. This is something that many of us do not want to talk about, but we are functioning as a child death review team in this county for the first time in over 4 years. It was dormant, it was quiet, and because of a grant that came through the Children's Justice Act out of Washington, it funded the Child Abuse Prevention Council in this county as well as other parts of California to improve the function of child death review teams in those counties. I'm very, very pleased to say that the sheriff, coroner, and all the other members of the team have been very cooperative, and in January of 08, we will formally do our first round of reviews, and it's very long coming, and we're very excited about the new way we'll be working together so we can make effective recommendations to our systems here in the county on how we protect children and families. So I think that was it, and if you have any other further questions, I'm happy to answer them.
That was a lot.
Yeah,
it's amazing what you do as a three-quarters time person. I don't believe it.
Well, I will say I'm one person, but I have probably about 15 people that I work with in the community who I have contracts with that provide all those services. So it's not just – I just sort of administrate it, so I won't take full credit for any of it.
Well, your organization is certainly well needed and well used. I mean, meaning that I think that you're certainly finding innovative ways to prevent child abuse.
Thank you.
And it's such an important thing. And I just wonder, do you see that there are more instances of that during the holidays when people are struggling with other issues?
Well, you know, I think a lot of the incidences that we hear about that do come up through reports to our Child Welfare Services Division are very consistent. There's very few spikes that we see. But to be honest, I don't think they get reported. It doesn't rise to the level of being reported. A lot of times folks feel like they, until it becomes really a mess or crisis is when you really hear about it. So I think just like most social and ills in our history, we are talking about child abuse, and we never did before the 1970s, the 1980s. We did not talk about it, and we are now today, and I think that's a good, healthy step.
Absolutely. Are there any questions? Okay. All right. There's no further questions, but thank you again so much for being here and for that excellent presentation.
My pleasure.
Excuse me. I think that concludes our program for this evening. And just to go briefly through the balance of the agenda, next would be the Health Commission updates. I, as the chair, have no update. Do any of the commissioners have any updates that they would like to report? It's only about 3 weeks since we last met. I did all our updating then. And I believe none of the committees have met, so there would be no committee reports. And we will be meeting again in January. One thing that Commissioner Hetherington mentioned to me is that we should be thinking about and possibly discussing in January what we're going to do for Public Health Week, which is in April of next year. But let's start thinking about it now. And other than that, I think that we are at the end of the agenda, unless there's someone, something else anyone would like to say.
I would just not like, I don't want to lose track of the detox study. So if we could agendize that in February, maybe.
Absolutely. This is something we've been looking for, and it's a very important subject, certainly for all of us, the health of our community. And I know that Commissioner Warren has been advocating just ceaselessly for an answer to the detox problem in our county. Then I would entertain a motion to adjourn. And there be no objection. This meeting is adjourned, and Merry Christmas to everyone.